About 2.5 or so weeks ago, my brother-in-law decided not to come up here for Christmas Day because he was feeling tired and sort of weak. And his wife, Rhoda, Blanche's sister, came up. And about 24 hours later, he said he was feeling really weak, and he told his wife that he called an ambulance to take him to the hospital just because he really wasn't feeling well. And they diagnosed pneumonia. And my sister-in-law went back to be with him. And Blanche and I went down shortly afterward, and they gave him a lot of antibiotics, and he seemed to be doing fine. And then we were told he took a turn for the worse. And it's really interesting what happens in hospitals. The antibiotics, of course, do great damage to the immune system, and there are many opportunistic infections in hospitals, and he was immediately attacked by them. And so while he was recovering from pneumonia, he became much sicker. And the infections went into his colon. There was talk about removing sections of his colon, but they couldn't until the pneumonia was gone. Then suddenly he had renal failure, and had to put him on dialysis. It was a very awful situation. What was particularly awful was how unprepared everyone, absolutely everyone, was for this. And within a few days, he died. And we were there with him a number of times, but the night of the day he died, Blanche and I were standing with him, and we were not allowed to touch him because he was so toxic. And then when he got to the ICU, we couldn't even go near him without a mask and a robe and everything else. And you know, he had no idea that this was going to go like that. And I've been around enough people dying that I had a strong sense of it, but I think people perceived me as being negative, so I try to keep my mouth shut. But it was pretty clear to me that the fight involved for him to return to health was beyond his body's capacity. And he died, and you know, I was asked to make a speech, a eulogy, at his funeral. This is the second eulogy I've had to make in a month and a half with people who died unexpectedly and quickly. And it's interesting to try to sum up a life that you look at a person's whole life and you try to put it in perspective. What was it about? What was the content? And it's really interesting what most lives are. Most lives are a little bit like movies you don't want to go see. It's sort of, this happens, that happens, this happens, that happens, this happens, that happens, the end. And in between, there's some really nice moments, a trip to Europe, a da-da-da-da-da-da. But it's really, it's not that they don't add up, because the people who care about people and who love people, their lives have enormous meaning and enormous value. But as real stories, they're not all that interesting. And it doesn't mean that their lives were unworthy on any level. But there is something often missing. And I could look into Joe's eyes in the last hours of his life, and there was a big question mark, like, what is this about? What has this been about? going on here? And it's not limited just to people like Joe. My friend Mark's father died last year at the age of 96. And in the last hours of his life, he's going, why me? And what's most amazing to me is that they haven't addressed what it means to be alive. The true epic journey of human life, which is the journey into what we will call realization or awakening or profound understanding of human existence, had not dawned, had not even begun in these lives. They were not questions that arose. Now, there is no judgment in that, because for many lives that is not a question that will come up. Many lives are, you live out your day-to-day existence and you leave the world. Some people have spectacular lives, meaning they have real drama in their lives, and we tend to become very intrigued by those people. We write movies and plays and television shows about people like that. And they become sometimes celebrated because they have lessons to teach us. The real drama of life, the real conflicts, moral conflicts, emotional conflicts, become really substantial, and they really begin to define and shape character in people. And character is something we get very interested in. But it's fascinating how many people don't have a lot of character. They're good people, they're nice people. You can love them tremendously. But character isn't necessarily what you would use to identify them. Not that character by itself is important, but what you begin to see is that certain real struggle in life tends to shape us and tends to begin to cause us to question what this is, what this life is that we're all living right now. And some people hunger for answers. Some people find really easy answers. They go to their priest and they go to their rabbi or their imam and they say, what is this? And they go, this is what it is. Here's the Bible, here's the Quran, here's the Torah, this is it. And you read it and you go, okay, I get it. You know? And you figure out, here's what the world is about, I understand it, and that's that. Some of these books are greater teachings than others. You go to something like the Bhagavad Gita, which is really about the struggle of the soul. And it brings up these deep, powerful issues of human existence. But a lot of people even just read that and go, oh, Krishna, Arjuna, they learned a lot. But they don't apply it for themselves. And what this ultimately comes down to is something's going on here and you don't know what it is. Our great teacher, Bob Dylan. What is going on here? And what does it have to do with you? And who's going to tell you? And how are you going to figure it out? And does it matter? One of the things I really sensed when Joe died and my friend Marvin died is that they were about to embark on a journey of enormous importance. And they were at the doorway to this extraordinary unfolding back into truth, if you will. And they were arriving at this port of departure with zero preparation. Now, again, I may be completely wrong, and it may be that we all arrive at that doorway and everything we need at that moment is presented to us. This may truly be the case, in which case everything I'm telling you is probably wrong. But I know if I were setting out on a trip to Asia or a trip to the moon or a trip to somewhere I've never been before, I would like a passport. I would like some information about where I'm going, what I need, what preparation I should make. I would like any of that possible. And I think many people leave the world with nothing at all, and they enter into this journey in a state of deep unknowing. Again, it may be fine. It may be just fine. But my own experience in the realm of dying, which was a psychedelic experience many, many, many years ago, and may not be the ultimate true experience, but I will tell you, in that experience, I was not ready. I was not ready, and I perceived all of the transformations that were taking place around me through the veil of ego and fear. Ego and fear is what most of us bring into our departure from this world, because we have never learned to let go of ego, and we have never learned to trust life. My experience was classical in those days. It was classical in that it had such a Judeo-Christian aspect. It was full of heaven and hell imagery. It was full of the horror of demons, all of these really deep ego entities. Archetypal entities all came into my experience, and it was really, really, really difficult. I came back from that experience very deeply transformed, to the extent that I knew I don't want to enter death again as unconscious and unprepared as I was that time. And I began what I'm doing now, which is a spiritual practice, a practice which I have learned over the years is nothing more than a preparation for letting go of yourself, of your ego, mind, identity. You would think it would be easy. You just slip out of yourself just like you slip out of a robe when you go to bed. But none of us have that capacity. Learning how to slip out of yourself is a learned capacity. Learning how to let go of you is something that comes with practice and comes with a real desire, a real profound desire to know who you are without this particular mind-body construct. Who am I? The extraordinary thing about spiritual practice and sitting still is that it begins to allow you to sever for a little bit of time this identity that you've built up over the course of time. And if you just let go of your name, your personality, your resume, just for a little bit, and for a little bit of time you let go of, are things going to work out in the future? Is everything going to be okay? What's going to happen? You just let go of that. And you just sit still. There you are. There you are. In stillness, you have slipped out of past and future. You've slipped out of all the things that grab you and hold you. And for a tiny little moment, you are completely present, and you are completely yourself. And you know that because you feel, oh yeah, this is right. Yeah. And the minute these old parts of you start to come back, you kind of feel like, ay, you don't really want them. Oh yeah, oh, I've got to work, I got to pay that bill and call that person and do this kind of thing, and oh, forgot about that stuff I didn't do 20 years ago, and all these things that sort of rush back into your sense of self, and you're back into the confusion and all of the complexity of being you. And so if you have a deep enough spiritual practice, every day you sit down and you remember, I can let go of all that. I can sit still and let it waft away. And I can just be me, be present, be truth, be real. All of that stuff lifts up, falls away, drops away. And you become, over the course of time, more and more practiced at just being. Just being. And you start to learn enormous primal lessons in just being. One of them is that life takes care of itself. Life rises up, moves through all of its endless transformations, dazzles, terrifies, thrills, bores you. And you are simply one with that. When you are in reaction to that, it breeds what they call desire and fear. When you start to separate from life, you start to want parts of it and not want other parts of it. And you start to feel this extraordinary kind of identity based on separation. But when you let go of the separation and you enter into life, there is no wanting or fearing. There's just being. And you are just the flow of existence. Sometimes the stillness is all there is. And sometimes there's enormous activity. It just is what it is. But you begin to sense that it has an extraordinary intelligence, extraordinary reality. And you are that reality. You are the polarities, you are the yin and yang of existence, and that is all you are. And that this thing that defines you as separate from that is your own mind in reaction to life. And when you let go of that, you are life itself. You are just the living reality that is. When this thing of death arrives, when the body really does fall away, when the mind really does let go, when personality really is taken from you, if you have spent some time in real meditative practice, the falling away is the loss of pretty much nothing. Because you've already let it go. You've already learned to let it go. It's a lifetime's practice. I do not want to let go or learn to let go at the last moment of my life. Having learned how much work is involved in letting go, learning to let go in the last second appears to me to be superhuman. On the other hand, I propose that it is also possible that at that moment it lifts itself up, it releases you, it frees you, and that perhaps then all of this work in life wasn't really necessary. That it takes care of itself. At that moment of leaving the body, the truth of your own being shines back at you with such brilliance and such joy and such completion that there you are and you feel, yes. And it didn't matter if you ever did a bit of work in your entire life, because it is all liberating at that moment. So if that's possible, and I don't know, if that's possible, then why bother with what we're talking about here? And the only answer to that is when I sit in my meditation, when I sit still, or now when I walk through my day in a state of openness and acceptance, I touch the wonder of life consciously all day long. And that may be the only reason to do this, because you get to know it consciously while you're here. Period. No purpose beyond it. No purpose about end of life. Nothing about, you know, worrying about what's going to happen down the road. You do it because of now, because you can, because it seems to be essential in our capacity as human beings to wake up to our true nature while we're here. And that the process of doing that, even if you're not good at it, the process of trying to do that is rich. It's ennobling. It is enabling. It opens you to the capacities that you never knew you had. It gives you a richness of being. It helps you look at life in a state of absolute awe. It shows you where you are and what this is. And you have that choice now. And if leaving this world is not so easy, it will be easier. We can talk about awakening and enlightenment and all of the ultimates of life, but for the moment I don't want to talk about that. In the inultimate, non-ultimate, moment to moment, day to day, getting through the day reality, being present in your life, being aware, opening, accepting, forgiving, allowing, seems to be a wonderful practice. Just a wonderful practice. And that's what's being made available to us. What scares me a little bit is I sit here with all of you, and every one of you is in a different place in relationship to what I'm talking about. Some of you are very complacent and very content with yourselves and with your lives. Some of you are literally at war with yourselves and your lives. Some of you are deep asleep. Some of you are unbelievably hungry. Some of you are trying really hard, even maybe too hard, to awaken. Every one of you is in a different place. Every one of you has to find in yourself how to make this work work. And you have to figure it out. And you know, we have to get rid of the name Rudy's work, and we have to get rid of the word the work. We have to just, this is about you. It's simply about you. Either you are taking this on as your own journey and making it real and making it meaningful, or you're not. Coming here is great. It's fine. You know, it's a reminder. I sit here and say the same thing every weekend. You know, after a while, either it gets boring or it connects. And you go, ah. And it really takes this over and over and over and over until you go, oh, that's what he means. We are so dense, it's beyond understanding. But we're also capable of enormous clarity, excuse me, enormous understanding, and enormous achievement spiritually. Each one of us is capable of it. If you want this, it's yours. But if you are fighting this, if you're resisting it, if you're at war with it, take that energy and turn it into success and take it into a battle that's won. If you're complacent with this, life's going to kick you at some point. You know, if Rudy was around, he would have kicked you. I'm not good at kicking, but Rudy would have done it. He would have kicked you in the head and said, get off your complacency. If you're asleep, he would have slapped you across the face. I mean, there are so many ways teachers work. All I do is talk. But I hope that this talk has some effect. And the only thing that might give it additional impact is the fact that life is fragile, it is short, death is unexpected, it comes like that. And when it does, you're either there and ready, or you're totally complacent, at war, or asleep, or probably a million other things. But I will tell you, as we get older, the door the opportunity to this knowing of yourself gets narrower and narrower and narrower. The time to do it, as you've heard in every great teaching, is now. This is the time to do it. There is no other time. Live it. Just live it. Do it. Wake up in the morning and do it. Go to bed at night and do it. And if you don't understand what do it is, beat yourself over the head until you figure it out. But there is something to be done. There's something very real to be done. And that thing is to be aware of who you are. The magic and the mystery and the joy and the amazement and the wonder of who you are. That's what's to be done. It's here. We'll talk about it till the end of days. But for the time being, try to let it settle in and take charge of your own awakening. Any questions?
I have a question. Is it possible to give unconditional love for more than 5 minutes?
Yes. 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 24/7. It's possible.
The bigger question, is it possible to give in a long-term relationship? Can parents give it to children? Can wife and husband give it to each other?
Yes. Do they know? But can they? Yes. I'm embarrassed to say that I'm just learning all of this now. You know, it's taken me 40 years or more of practice with Rudy, and I'm finally getting it. You know, I'm calling it practicing awakening. And for those of us who have not truly awakened and become enlightened beings, and there's a fair number of us around, you can live as though you have. You can live this pretend awakening by I talked about this the last few weeks in class. It's a very crucial idea for me. It's living in a state of constant acceptance of what is. In no way resisting the moment that arises. Just opening to that moment. It is astounding what that practice does. I described it originally as an experiment, but it's been going on now for a couple of months, and it's really been the most extraordinary practice. Because you just keep that moment happening. Everything that arises, you essentially say yes to. You just open to it. I mean, you can resist something, but then at least do it consciously. Understand why you say no to something. Understand why you don't love someone in any given moment. Just try to accept even the fact that I don't love somebody. Just accept the closeness of your heart. Accept the state you're in as being what you are, but be conscious and watch what that does, because it starts to move things around inside you in a remarkable way. Accepting the moment is logical because it's what is. And the universe has somehow made it what is. So why would you reject it? Why? Every time you reject it, what you do is you begin to see the structure of ego. Because ego is essentially rejecting what is, in one way or the other. I won't buy it this way because I want it that way. No, I'm not going to take a chocolate ice cream cone because I want vanilla. And you keep doing these things, and ultimately you have created and structured an entity that is built on rejecting what is. Undo that by accepting what is, or at least acknowledging it. It's a really simple thing, really simple. It's what Rudy called surrender. Please help me to surrender, the core of this exercise. Please help me to surrender, meaning to be an acceptance of what is. It changes your life.
Rudy frequently speaks about working with the negative tensions that arise. And whenever I read about him writing about that, I get the sense that he does not mean it just in any kind of cloudy way. He means it very practically, as if those negative tensions are like food for our digestive system, and now we have to eat them.
Yeah.
But it's extraordinarily difficult to do that in the moment of tension. Like if a tension arises, you feel that knot, everything in you shuts down, there's tightness.
Let me suggest accepting it when it happens. Don't try to make it other. Watch this thing go tense up inside you, and don't think, uh-oh, it shouldn't be that. I should be open and sweet and wonderful and, you know, and happy right now, and I shouldn't be that. That's exactly the opposite, I think, of what I'm discovering. What you're that moment happens, and you're thinking, it shouldn't be that way. I have an ideal of what it should be, which is it should be sweet and light. And so you try to change it into something else, and you resist the fact of what is. That just happened. You go, okay, and sit with it. You will feel it. It won't be pleasant, but you will feel it, and you will go, okay, that's what is. And live it. Just live with it. Part of what will occur is something in you may want to change it. May want to change it just because it feels like that's the thing you should do. But you will be on board with that. You will be on board with that consciously. You will say, I can take a little breath into this space and absorb that. And it will turn into something else. You can choose to do that. It becomes conscious relationship to that negative tension. Or just accept it and watch where it goes. What really tends to happen when you accept things is that their lifespan is short. And they tend to turn into something else. And it's the accepting of it that allows it to change rather than the rejecting it. Often trying to turn it into sweetness and light actually reinforces its negativity. It reinforces it because you're in opposition to it. You think I'm trying to get rid of it and do something better, but in fact, what you're really doing is saying, I will not accept this thing. So that becomes its own problem. Just accepting it often presents the solution at the same time. The acceptance itself often is the solution. Because it starts to show you what your ego wants, who you are trying to define yourself as, which is usually something other than what really is. And that is not necessarily going to bring you what you in the larger sense want. What you want ultimately is to be what is. Without judgment, without opposition, without resistance, it's just be it. And what you will discover, and it's a big discovery, is life is good and bad, fun and not fun, sweetness and sourness. It's the whole thing. And real acceptance is all that. It's hard. It's hard because we all want it to be one way, and it isn't one way. It is yin and yang always. That's the soup of life. But accepting that, strangely enough, makes it delicious.
Bruce? I think it's really brilliant when you your ability to take a theme and write a story, basically. And as you were talking about the 95-year-old guy in the next bed, screaming out, why me? I had this image of somebody walking up to his ear and whispering in his ear, it's not why me, it's like, what me?
Yeah, he wasn't ready for that one. No, I mean, I knew this man, I liked him a lot, but he in no way at any moment in his life looked at this in any reflective way. He just, played golf and had a decent life. But it was this happens, over. And it was like, what do you mean over? Where did that come from? And he buried everyone in his life, but he still didn't know he was going to be one of those people. Why not? It's all around us. And when I have a week like I just had, or a month, it's really there, and it really gets the psyche going. It either gets you working spiritually, or it just, you bury it as fast as you can and you move on to the next game of golf.
What a blessing.
It is a blessing. Anyone else?
I'm just thinking of the computer in 2001 fighting Big Shot.
Yeah, right. Daisy.
It never was.
Yeah, it never was, right. Right. Anyone else?
That's the way to go, spending Daisy.
Well, a lot of us do. I mean, a lot of us. I mean, that is one of the ways you go. You become infantile again. You lose everything, and then you get back into that perfect state. But the thing is, there's no consciousness. You know, and what I think we want is just consciousness. But again, I add this to almost everything I say. I could be completely wrong on every level. But so what? George?
My sense as I get older that you fear more your end coming, and it makes you want to work deeper. And yet you also want to escape from it more.
I think that's a war. I really believe you're in that war, actually. I think we're sitting here, you're watching it in yourself. There's a part of you that really says, I got to hear this, I got to pay attention. And there's another part of you that goes, let me go back to my friends. You know, let me get away from this. And I feel it. I mean, I really do feel it. I feel it in myself, but I'm so committed. You know, and I even watch the negative, fearful stuff come up in me, and I go, of course. Of course that would be there. Exactly. Once you accept the war, then you're already in this process of transcendence. Once you accept the war and observe the war rather than be in the war, it's really fascinating to watch what the human psyche goes through and how it has to resolve this ultimate dilemma of I will not exist.
And then all the people that die around us, that more and more as we get older, are like just opening up the vision of
absolutely. It goes faster and faster and becomes more and more insistent, and yet most people tend to play more golf. Yeah, there's no preparation. There's no willingness to accept this thing, and ultimately you have to accept it.
And dying in this country is horrible. You know, everybody's away from you.
Well, that was the worst part for me with Joe. The worst part was
hospitals are the most horrible places for people.
It's not ideal. But on the other hand, if you're fighting for life, and in a situation like this, there was a chance maybe he would make it. Yeah, you do it all. You know, you keep hoping and praying this will give him another shot. At what? Maybe at this dialogue.
Better handicap, maybe.
Better handicap, yes. That's the other option. Michael, did you have a question?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, guys, thank you all very much. Next weekend is Rudy's birthday, the 24th. And the day after is Marty's birthday, and today is Arkady's birthday. So am I right?
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a lot of celebration going on around here at the same time as the people dying. I would next weekend particularly, if those of you who want, we will celebrate Rudy's birthday in some way, probably just with more food, and I'll talk about him more specifically. But you know, I have endless gratitude to Rudy for being the linchpin in this entire drama of unfolding in my life, and he has kicked me so dramatically into this arena that I am here 40 years after the fact. So that's a great teacher to me, somebody who has an impact on your life in that regard. So we will celebrate that. And when I come back from London, the weekend I get back is Rudy's Samadhi celebration, which is on Sunday the 21st. Of February, and we'll do even more food, and I will show the videos that I often show of Rudy, just to bring him front and center and present in that weekend, and just encourage all of you who want to come and be celebratory and be part of it, just to know that for me particularly the period between Rudy's birthday and his Samadhi, which is about a month. Tends to be the most powerful time of year for me spiritually. It's a really extraordinary time, and it can be for all of us. You just have to tap into this remarkable energy that was brought into the world. And he's one of many teachers, but he's my teacher, and so I celebrate that. Thank you, guys. Happy birthday, Arkady. Marty, almost.